It was twilight as I made my way to the inner temple, hurrying past little knots of barristers, edging past groups of clerks and legal secretaries, and reflecting on the strange circumstances that had brought me here. Perhaps I appeared to the legal eye a suspicious, furtive character, out of place among those wigs and gowns. Certainly I shrank from their gaze, because I wasn't looking for a lawyer. My purpose was more sinister. What brought me here that night was murder. For 6 decades, some of the greatest criminal minds in history have been working in public on the perfect murder and on solving it. We're talking crime writing here, and we're talking some of the best in the business. The Collins Crime Club is celebrating its Diamond Jubilee. From 1930, when The Noose by Philip MacDonald was first published for the club, not a club actually, but an informal association of enthusiasts, Collins have made a virtue of wrongdoing. From Nicholas Blake to Mike Ripley, from Nagayo Marsh to Sarah Cordwell, the Crime Club has been the touchstone of murder and detection for 60 years. 13 Crime Club writers, including Robert Barnard, Reginald Hill, and Gwendolyn Butler, have been gathered together into a volume of specially commissioned short stories entitled A Suit of Diamonds, which is published to mark the Diamond Jubilee. Most of these writers and many others were also present at Wednesday's reception where the new book was launched, and 12 classics from the past 20 years of the Crime Club were reissued. How do you celebrate this kind of anniversary? You kill somebody. In A Suit of Diamonds, I count 18 violent deaths. In Reginald Hill's new book, Bones and Silence, there are 6 violent deaths in the course of 360 pages, which isn't so high a corpse count as A Suit of Diamonds, but they do all occur in the same case. If I knew my crime writers, there had to be a murder at that reception. It was too good an opportunity to miss. There were only 2 questions. Where was the corpse? And which of the mild-mannered middle-aged ladies, or gentlemen in tweed jackets, was the killer? Was it the lady barrister smoking a pipe? Was it the ex-academic with the beard, or the seductive young woman from Florence, who had brought an Italian policeman with her, and what better alibi? My best bet, if I wanted to smoke him or her out, was to pose as a reporter from LBC, codenamed Art Beast, and ask a couple of leading questions. Firstly, murder. The more sanguinary, the better?
No. No?
I don't think necessarily so.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yes. Could we possibly go into a little more detail?
I do think it is quite wrong to treat murder frivolously or to encourage people to linger over the details.
The more skillful the detection, the better written and the better characterized, the better.
It's what the readers want. It's what we want. And it's great fun doing it.
There are subtleties of murder's technique which are more interesting than just having a lot of blood and guts all over the place.
Magdalen Nabb's new novel, The Marshal's Own Case, contains only one murder. Disappointing, you might think, but it was a fairly nasty murder.
I don't think I do nasty murders, except perhaps the last one.
Well, the one in the new book is extremely nasty. It's all dismembered.
Yes, that's true. This is a bit dismembered, isn't it?
Mm. But completely dismembered, in fact.
Well, I'm not usually very bloodthirsty, I don't think. I'm a bit Greek about violence on the stage.
Be that as it may, a quick statistical study showed that in the collection of stories, carefully divided between the sexes and arranged in alphabetical order of authors, Crime Club people have tidy minds, the ladies are responsible for twice as many deaths as the gentlemen. And come to think of it, crime fiction is a genre in which women have always been prominent. I wonder why that is.
Good question. We like it.
Aha! Got her first time. But hang on, surely that's too easy. Marion Babson's enthusiasm for crime must be a red herring, mustn't it? I'd better get another opinion. What does Margaret Moore think?
I think we've been socially conditioned to observe closely. We, as little girls, have been expected to do part of the entertaining, so we have to watch when people are getting bored, how they're interacting, interrupt support later on in many ways in our relationship, and this does give you a sort of informal psychological knowledge, if you like, which is very useful in disentangling motives. We're interested in human motivation, I think.
This line of inquiry was proving less fruitful than I hoped. I decided on another tack. My next suspect was the tall, distinguished, soft-spoken man with a beard. He had addressed the reception earlier on with a few well-chosen words, whose humour and good-naturedness did nothing to give him away. His name was Reginald Hill, but he's been known to use aliases, or noms de plume, as he calls them. I took the psychological approach. Why crime, I asked him.
I first started writing when I was a teenager, and I spent my 20s filling my bottom drawer with the first chapters of the great English novel. If you want first chapters of the great English novel, I'm your man. And I never got any further, because I got to a certain stage, and I began to think, what on earth is this all about?
Well, Malcolm Bradbury would have made a book out of all those first chapters.
Malcolm Bradbury has made a book out of all those first chapters. I've read it. It was very good, too. See, the thing about a crime story is that you've got a skeleton there. The skeleton is the puzzle. It is the act of detection. The crime is committed. It's got to be detected. You've got a criminal at the other end who will be revealed or not. And that's the skeleton. Then you can put the flesh on that. And whenever you're in doubt about what your story is about, you've always got that to go to. You've got something to hang on to.
There's something else I never could understand about crime novels, and that's why detectives have to have such extravagant names. In the story collection, we meet Superintendent Perry Trethowan, the androgynous Professor Hilary Tamar, Hypatia Kelling, Samantha Polegate-White. Inspired, I start to plan a detective story of my own concerning supercilious sleuth Augustus Shufflebottom, who achieves glory by tracking down a maniac do-it-yourself enthusiast who becomes a mass murderer. I think it's got promise, but Shufflebottom is still a shadowy character in my mind. What makes him special, like Lovejoy or Inspector Morse or Hercule Poirot? Where, in fact, do these crime writers get their characters from? Well, Magdalene Nab bases her Italian detective on a real Italian policeman, and she brought one along with her to the reception. I was more worried about Reginald Hill's sources, though. His character, Andy Diel, is frankly a slob. He is also a Yorkshireman, as I am. What is he trying to tell us?
They make very good criminals.
Yes, but Andy Diel is a policeman.
I invented him in the first place, merely as a foil to Peter Pascoe. I mean, Peter Pascoe was the young, sensitive, intellectual graduate who joined the police force. I thought of myself, you see, in those days as a young, sensitive, intellectual undergraduate. In fact, who hadn't joined the police force, but I imagine what it would be like if I had. And I wanted something to, you know, to make this character stand out against, and I invented Andy Diel.
I wasn't getting very far in my search for murderer, or even victim. I decided to try the direct approach. Elizabeth Walter is the editor of Collins Crime Club, as well as being an author herself. I asked her directly.
I noticed there isn't a corpse here tonight. Why is that?
Nobody thought of killing anybody.
A likely story. These people think of little else. I tried the same interrogative technique with Mike Ripley, creator of Angel, a streetwise Arthur Daly character with a degree.
I noticed there isn't a corpse here tonight. Were you looking for one?
Well, I don't think you've looked hard enough. I've spotted at least six, but...
I don't mean the writers.
Oh, well, apart from the writers, no, they don't seem to be any. It's been a very civilised do indeed. Quite disappointing, really. I was expecting at least one body across the staircase, and there's a lovely fall down here from a balcony. We could have done something. We should have thought about it earlier.
I was getting nowhere. These people were too clever for me. Not only could I not tell who had committed the crime, I never can until the detective solves the case, I couldn't even find out what crime had been committed. Perhaps the reason for this was that crime writers are incredibly prolific. Where some writers squeeze a novel out every 7 years, crime writers seem to publish one every 3 or 4 weeks. Reginald Hill has written about 20 books since 1969. Marion Babson has lost count, although she has 30 or 31 in print. She'd written 14 or 15 novels by the time the first one was published. Let's face it, these people simply know more about murder than I do. These people are masters of the false lead, the red herring, the MacGuffin, and I am out of my depth. My only hope of outsmarting them has to be to play them at their own game. I have another plot for a murder story, which I'd like to run by you to see how it sounds. Basically, it revolves around a man who murders his wife by poisoning her Rice Krispies. He's a serial killer. What do you think? It began to rain as I left the Inner Temple. I pulled my collar up against the elements and asked myself if I'd learned anything. Yes, I think I have. I now realise what all those crime writers were really trying to tell me, that the perfect murder is the one no one knows has been committed.